Well, hello and welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. And today, as always, I am joined by my co-host and collaborator, Irvin Nugent. And Irvin, it's good to see you today. And how the heck are you?
Well, likewise, Bridget. Thank you. I am doing well. I am actually suffering. Spring is in the air. I got a little bit of hay fever this year. So it's kind of like I woke up and I was like, oh, but I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the new budding trees, et cetera. Uh-huh. And I love this time of year, kind of both nature-wise and also personal-wise. I kind of feel I'm coming out of hibernation and new things are happening.
Love it, love it. Speaking of hibernation, my three-year-old grandson used that word with me the other day. Yeah, we were just sitting there looking out the back, you know, and we were talking about insects and different things and birds. And he goes, the bears have been hibernating. He's like, do you know what hibernation is? I'm like, oh, well, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I love it. I know.
But you know, it's funny, Irvin, that you mention a little bit of, would you say hay fever?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I feel a little scratchy, like my eyes are a little watery, my throat's a little scratchy, and I'm thinking it's the same thing. Small price to pay.
So, Bridget, I'm excited about today's conversation. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, so we are going to be talking about what I think is a very common frustration, a common experience with the managers and the leaders that I coach. And, you know, it's really at its core, it's a communication challenge, but it sounds like this. So when they come to a coaching session with this particular issue or complaint, they say something to this effect. You know, I have been talking to my team or my employee about this thing. I've said it numerous times, and I can just tell they're not getting it. And I don't know what to do because I feel like I just have to keep repeating myself. And they are genuinely puzzled and frustrated because they feel they've said it, so why haven't they gotten it, right? Mm-hmm. And the it could be numerous things. It might be like, hey, I've shared an expectation, but they're not living up to it. Or I've told them about this new process that we have to follow, but they're not adopting it. Or, you know, I've just made a request and they said yes, and then they didn't follow up on it. And it could be, you know, it could be with an employee, but it could be with a coworker, a board member, whatever. And I'm really curious, Irvin, if that frustration, and particularly the way that I expressed it, sounds familiar to you.
It not only sounds familiar, but it's so funny we're talking about this, because I would have to say in the last month, two engagements have started out like this. One was, and they're kind of conflict kind of engagements, but at the core of it, one is about feedback that a supervisor is convinced that they have detailed in painstakingly clear terms, and the recipient is very clear that not once was that ever said. And so people are like, I don't understand this. I'm sure I explained it. So that's it. The second one is actually a team of supervisors, and the person over them is very clear that they have made their request of doing a procedure a certain way has been enunciated not once but twice, and is perplexed that people are not understanding it, and it's causing tension and conflict. So there you go. It's right on par for what I'm experiencing, and I've heard this time and time again. So this is something very, very common.
Yeah, and I'm guessing our listeners are nodding their head, particularly those of you who have tuned in. You saw the title of this, right? Why are they not getting it? And you're like, bingo, I need the answer to that.
Yeah.
Irvin, you know, when you were in the trenches yourself as a leader running an organization and dealing with all the complexities that come with that, do you ever remember feeling like this yourself?
I do, but you know, it's funny. The thing that's coming to my mind is actually, I'm always amazed sometimes as a trainer or doing facilitation.
Yeah.
And I will set up an exercise or something. And I think I have been so darn clear. I mean, I have laid it out And I'm always amazed at people who just ask questions because they don't get it. And it's like, yeah. I'm always like, where is the missing? Like, did I not communicate properly? Like something went on there. I mean, I'm sure I said these words. So from that perspective, I still face that yeah. I'm always quite, and actually perplexed, because I'm aware that it's sometimes that I have to be clear. And I think yeah. I have been, but I'm surprised that people just don't get it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like when you feel you've been crystal clear, the best word that you've said is we're just perplexed. You yeah. know, I agree as a facilitator or trainer, I've experienced the same thing. It's such a common experience, obviously. So let's talk first about the external realities in which we live and work. And what do you think contributes to this common experience that has to do with the environment that we're in?
You know, so I'm wondering, certainly this is something we have spoken about many times. I'm sensing if the sheer sense of overwhelm that people are under is part of this puzzle, mm-hmm. in the sense of, you know, the pace of change, the sheer volume of emails, the pace of work. I know in many organizations I'm in, short staffed, and so people are covering for each other. And yep. I feel that maybe part of that inundation, that sense of overwhelm, means that we have many, many different competing things for our time. And this is just one among many. Maybe in this noise, it's hard to hear.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that, you know, you're right. We've talked about overwhelm before, but I do think that the sheer volume of information mm-hmm. is just, it's just hard to cut through, right? It just is. And so I think it shouldn't surprise us. It shouldn't really perplex us that sometimes our messages don't get through. Mm-hmm. But I think what we have to do, because we know that repeating isn't helping. I mean, that's what my clients say. It's like, how many times do I have to repeat myself? So that's not helping. So what we can do is step back and ask a different question, you know, which is, how might I be inadvertently contributing to this breakdown in communication? Because the context is not likely to change, right? Yeah. So, you know, there could be numerous factors at play here. But I think when I look at all of the conversations that I've had with clients over the years about this, I think there's three really common barriers to this. So, Irvin, why don't you start us off with the first one?
Yeah, I think the very act of communication itself is complex. And I think at times we maybe hold a very simplistic notion of what it means to communicate. And so on the surface, communication is about sending or sharing a message. I have an expectation. I have a task. I have some feedback and I share that and I've spoken it and I've written it in an email and therefore I have communicated. And, you know, when you ask someone, well, how did you communicate? Well, I sent it at a meeting or I emailed it. And of course, you know, communication is a little more complex than that because communication is about really arriving at a shared understanding. And so therefore, it's not just about hitting it out. It's not just putting it out. It's also about the receiver. And mm-hmm. so there's two parties in or more in a communication kind of act. And so therefore, I think at times we don't appreciate what it means to actually receive that communication. Mm-hmm. And I think the only way we can be sure that something we have sent out is actually being received is in this active dialogue back and forth in which, you know, questions are asked and answers are received. And really we come to this shared understanding that this expectation, this feedback, whatever it is you've put out in communication is actually being received. And in that dialogue, I think at times we are quite surprised that either something we said didn't quite land, was interpreted differently, and it takes quite a bit to get it. And therefore, I think that's why perhaps the first, you know, kind of the first area that we may be a little surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how does that resonate, Bridget? Do you think that comes up a lot in the leaders that you coach?
I think that it is this unquestioned assumption that communication is one way. You tell people, you share, right? And the idea that it's not about sharing, that it's about creating shared understanding, I don't think is something leaders are necessarily taught or pay attention to. But you know, that remember that funny game, like what is it called? The telephone game where whispers, right? Yeah. There is endless opportunity for things that are said to be misinterpreted in so many ways. And like you said, until we get into that back and forth where questions are being asked and people saying, oh, wait a second, tell me more about what you just said there, or I thought you meant this, we can keep telling people over and over again, but that's not going to get us there. Right. Mm. So the dialogue is so essential, that back and forth. And, you know, I'm wondering just for our listeners, Irvin, if maybe you have an example you could share with them of maybe somebody you coached who got better at that and was able to therefore not have to get into this cycle of frustration and repetition. Anything come to mind?
You know, I'm thinking of one client here, and it's really around the issue of email. They started noticing that they were having issues with sending emails, thinking that issues had been addressed, only to find out later that either the person misread the email or hadn't noticed the email or took something different away. And it was very interesting because, you know, I think everyone has a different style of communication. And the problem, of course, with email is that email is the one that has the biggest risk of misinterpretation. Because when it comes to communication, we like to say that there are different elements that make up the communication. And email only has one, the written word. We don't hear a voice. We don't see a person. So it is ripe for misunderstanding. As they kind of thought through this in coaching, one of the things that they decided was that they would change how they communicated from the perspective of if they thought that something important was in this email, that they would pick up a phone and they would call the person. Yeah. And even if it was, hey, I'm about to send an email and it's pretty important, I just wanted to alert you. Just from the point of view that the person then, when they got the email, was like, oh, okay. Or if there was some nuance in the communication that at least they could have a conversation. And frankly, to be honest, they were dreading it because they're saying, I don't have the time. I don't have the time to do this. But they committed to doing it. And what was really interesting was, does it take some more time? Yes. But he said, I honestly think it's saving time in the long run because we're having less of these issues of people misunderstanding or saying they hadn't got something or the message not being received.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're mentioning just the sheer lack of time. I think we rely more on emails and Slack and other communication channels because we just don't feel like we have the time to pick up the phone and call people. As your client pointed out, in the end, it saves time. It takes a little time, but it saves time because what's happening there is, in essence, a bit of a dialogue. Right? Yeah. Not a monologue. Yeah. And as you said, email's ripe for misunderstanding. So I think that's such a good example.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me share something that I think is equally at play here in terms of why leaders get so frustrated and feel like they have to repeat themselves. And that is that many of the leaders I work with think they've been clearer than they actually have been. And I think there's numerous reasons for this. I think it can be because maybe they've talked about this in their own heads for a while and it's lived in them for a long time and they think it's clear. When I ask the people who work with leaders, what did you hear? They often have heard something really different. So let me give you an example. I remember coaching a client one time and he said, you know, the biggest problem with my senior manager is that he's not strategic enough. And I said, oh, well, have you told him that? He goes, yeah. I said, you need to be more strategic. And I said, did you talk about what being strategic means? Pause. Well, I mean, yeah, it was in the job description, and I think he knows what I mean, and it's pretty obvious. And I said, well, tell me what you mean by he needs to be more strategic. And so we had a conversation, and he eventually was able to describe it. But of course, being strategic means different things to different people at a different level. So like if I said to you, Irvin, I'm going to ask you this right now. What does being strategic mean to you? What would you say?
Means that you are aware of the bigger picture and making decisions within that context.
Yeah. And I think that's a very common way of looking at it. You know what my client said? Because that's what I was wondering if he was going to go there. And he said, no, he didn't say no. He just said, it's about being two steps ahead and looking around the bend, around the corner and anticipating things. Mm. He's like a good chess player does that. Mm. And my manager's not doing that. Mm. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That's not necessarily how your employee is thinking of what it means to be strategic. So it sounds like you need to have a conversation. Mm. Right. So I would say to our listeners, if you have found yourself frustrated recently with communication and people not getting it, consider where you might not have been as clear as you believe you have been. And again, what is the biggest culprit? I'll tell you what I think, Irvin. The biggest culprit is for leaders being really clear. What is your pick of the day, the biggest culprit for why? Leaders want to be clear, but why is it that they actually sometimes aren't?
Well, I think because they themselves are not clear, because I think they are confused themselves.
Because they haven't actually taken the time, right? Yeah. To step back and say, well, I want him to be more strategic, but like, what does that really mean? And in what ways is he doing that? And in what ways is he not doing that? And might I give him some examples? Yeah.
Yeah. I just had a really interesting conversation. I just want to, was between a supervisor and a person who is about to begin coaching. And we facilitate a conversation where I'm kind of there in the listening mode. And I said to the supervisor, well, this person, I think they show too much empathy. I said, oh, interesting. I said, okay, well, can you give me concrete behaviors where you saw that? And they couldn't. It was kind of like, well, what do you mean by that? And it was like they thought of something to say, but they hadn't thought it out.
Yes.
And it's so interesting that this is very common that we don't take time to think things out.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. And here's the thing. What we are wanting from people is some kind of change. We want them to act on our words.
Yes.
But when we don't paint a picture of what that looks like,
yep.
No wonder we don't get people adopting what we want or acting on what we've said, because yep. We, as you just said, we don't really speak with enough specificity or concreteness. And so I think that's a main culprit. So the two are kind of tied together. The first one is, you know, we just assume if I've said it, then I've communicated. No, we need back and forth dialogue to test. But then followed right behind that is this notion of just because you've said it doesn't mean you were clear.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So two barriers, but there's a third. And Irvin, share with listeners what this third barrier is.
Yeah, I think, you know, we always try and whatever topic we address, look at a more systems lens, talking about that bigger picture. So if you step back and we look about the whole act and challenge of communicating and being on the same page from a systems perspective, it brings to mind a quote from someone we've mentioned before in the program, Ed Friedman, who really was a great thinker in this area and really when it comes to leadership. And he said the following when it comes to communication. He said, communication does not depend on syntax or eloquence or rhetoric, or articulation, but on the emotional context in which the message is being heard. People can only hear when they are moving towards you, and they are not likely to when your words are pursuing them. Even the choicest words lose their power when they are used to overpower. Attitudes are the real figures of speech. Mm-hmm. So at the core of what he is trying to say there is that all communication doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in an emotional context. and our communication is either enhancing or interfering with the ability for people to hear and understand one another. And I think very often leaders spend an inordinate amount of time trying to find the right words. I mean, I do a lot of work around conflict. And let me tell you, I have rehearsed conversations with people and they are like, well, how should I start this? What words? What's the best words? And are these words right? That word? And of course, but then sometimes I'll say to them, I said, you know, really, what's really more important is the kind of the emotional attitude you're going into. Like what is the tone you're going to set? Because, and that's not about words. And they're like, really? And I think that's what Friedman is talking about, is it all communication is emotional. And therefore, and you know, to be heard and to be really heard, I think we have to pay attention, not just to the words, but also to our tenor, to our tone, to the mood that we're walking into this conversation with, because that is going to be caught. And that level, if there's any anxiety, and there probably is some anxiety there, that is going to be present and people are going to experience that and they're going to be part of that anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Bridget, can you think of an example of a client who perhaps was able to realize that communication was more than just about the words and really had much more to do with the energy or the mood that they were telegraphing?
Yeah, I can. And, you know, I have to say that the learning in this was for me as a coach as well. Mm. I'm thinking of a client that I was working with, and she was not able to get through to her peers in a way that she wanted. She was frustrated. She had to coordinate with people at her same level. They just weren't coming through, and she was wanting them to step up to the plate, and they were not stepping up to the plate. And you know what, Irvin? I have to say that we spent a fair amount of time in a couple of coaching sessions, and this was partly my fault, trying to get the words just right. You know, I was sharing with her, well, have you tried this? And have you said that? Right. And I really got into it with her as if we could find the perfect sentences, they would perk up and do what she wanted. Mm. And then she would come back and say, yeah, I said all that. And they still didn't follow through. And then it was like, I woke up in the conversation and remembered, you know, exactly what Friedman was telling us. I said, you know what? Wait. Let's step back here. Let's go back to one of these conversations. Forget about the words and all of that. I said, I'm sure you did just fine. But if you were a fly on the wall, observing the conversation with curiosity and not judgment, how might you describe the energy you were emanating in that meeting? And to this person's credit, I mean, they were quite self-aware. You know, they said, well, I've been told I have a stern face, so I know that. And I'm going to guess that I came across as intense, impatient, and curt. Mm-hmm. And it was a really interesting and lovely moment, because in the process of stepping back to observe herself, I didn't have to say anything else. She just realized that that was what was really creating the interference in the communication. And it's just as if, you know, when you, in the old days when people would listen to radios and then there would be static, that's what was going on there. Mm. And it ended up shifting what she decided to practice, which was not about finding the most eloquent words, but to pay attention to the mood that she was embodying in that conversation. So words matter, right? Of course they do. Clarity matters. We've already talked about that. But emotional context matters. And this is something I think we all forget to pay attention to, myself included.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you relate to that, Irvin? Like in your personal life, have you ever sort of not really paid attention to that as much as you should
have? Absolutely. Because I think we do. We naturally as human beings default to words. And I think we forget about this whole element, this nonverbal element, this emotional element of any conversation that's being read by the other person, even if we're not aware. And another thing strikes me in that example as well, and I think it's good for us to consider. And, you know, that is this continuum that we all have between task and relationship. And that under pressure, when there's a lot of anxiety, we tend to default into our comfort area. So, for example, if your comfort is more kind of staying on task, mm-hmm. then what tends to happen is that we can push too fast, too soon. Let's get down to business. And that can be really off-putting for some people. And the other is, you know, this relationship, if you're kind of pushing towards that, you know, that, you know, you maybe end up watering down the message mm-hmm. and making it more comfortable to hear, toning it down. And so I think it's really important to recognize where are you in that continuum. Like for me, I'm very much in the relationship. And so when I'm in kind of anxious, you know, here I am in words, but really what's driving those words is the emotional field below the surface that I'm really not spending attention to. And when you're able to say, oh, what's happening there? Like this anxiety mm-hmm. you're feeling, this is driving the message. And mm-hmm. really then you can pivot and say, where, you know, where should I be? Like what yeah. is the appropriate mm-hmm. message that I want to share? Yeah.
You know, what I'm curious about is, so your husband, Fred, where is he on that continuum?
Oh, he's very much the opposite. He's tasked.
Yeah. Why did I know that? It's because it goes back to the dishwashing loading that we talked
yes,
about.
Yes, totally. That. He goes for task. And then
isn't it just so funny how we often find ourselves partnered with people who have the opposite default yeah. tendencies, you know? So here we are in conversation, whether it's with our spouse or our boss, who may have the different, you know, they're different on that continuum. When they get anxious, it's like, look, let's stop all this stuff and let's get down to the brass tacks. Meanwhile, you're feeling anxious about the connection and the quality of the relationship. And it's this back and forth tug of war, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a tug of war. But isn't that challenging?
Yeah, totally is. So, Bridget, I'm curious, any final thoughts as we kind of wrap up this conversation?
You know, nothing to add. I think I would just kind of say to those of you that are listening to this conversation, you know, if you are frustrated by your ability to get through to your employees, your team, your peers, I hope that you take heart from this conversation because you are certainly not alone. Right? You find yourself frustrated, perplexed, and repeating yourself, you're in good company. Mm. And it doesn't have to be that way, right? So of course, the solution isn't to keep repeating yourself. It's really to step back and observe your contribution to this pattern. And I would imagine that one of the three barriers that we've mentioned is something you could grab hold of and make a little tweak in the way that you approach the next conversation in order to really build that shared understanding and get on the same page. It actually comes back to us, doesn't it, Irvin?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Irvin, as always, for this conversation.
My pleasure. I enjoy this. It's a great conversation. Very timely.
Take care, listeners. Thank you for joining us.